They're trapped. I watched one half of the Pryor Mountain herd die in 1977, 400 yards from where they could have survived, but they couldn't get there because of a fence.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is the Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. From ranches to rigs, this podcast tells stories of the West as it is. Of course, there's no cowboy without his trusty steed, so this month we'll hear about the role of horses in Western life, and about wild horse herds and the steps being taken to manage herd size. But we'll start on the domesticated side with a trip to King's Saddlery and Museum in Sheridan. When it opened in 1963, King's Saddlery was a small shop serving the surrounding ranching and horse riding community in northern Wyoming. In the 40 years that followed, King's became an institution. Founder Don King's distinctive Sheridan-style leatherwork is the finest in its class, and enthusiasts come from around the world to see the saddlery and the attached museum. Wyoming Public Radio's Miles Bryan takes us there.
It's a Friday afternoon, and King's Saddlery is pretty quiet. The busy rodeo season is over, and the shop is catching up on repairs. It's a good time to catch Bruce King, son of Don King and current owner of the business. I'm a saddle newbie, so my first question is, what makes a King saddle so good?
Our name's on it, and it's supposed to be made with a little more caution than some of the others.
If you're thinking Bruce is being overly modest here, he is. King's reputation for quality and craftsmanship has been building since the 1960s, when a young ranch hand from Douglas named Don King settled down in the area and started making things for his cowboy friends. As other saddle shops closed down or were replaced by cheap machine-made goods, King's kept doing things slowly and by hand. Bruce says part of that comes from his dad wanting King's to remain a family business.
You know, they sat us down at the table and said, now, we're going to buy this building, which was that building across there. I said, if you kids want to stick around, you're more than welcome. If we do this, we need you. So we did, they did, and here we are.
I ask Bruce how he would sum up the feel of this place.
Laid back Western.
There you go.
That's it.
That's Karen Wadenbach. She's a local historian, and she works part-time at the Don King Museum, a space connected to the shop that displays a lifetime of collected Western memorabilia.
Anywhere else, there would be an armed guard at that door. But they just say, give an offering, come in and enjoy. That's laid back Western.
That attitude carries over to the employees here, too. Almost everyone I talked to had worked at King's for more than a quarter century. Link Weaver does most of the saddle work.
This is a leather rosette. This helps hold that saddle string down.
Weaver says his daily routine is pretty consistent, but now and again he does get to meet some notable people.
Wilford Brimley used to come in once in a while. John King made a saddle for Tom Selleck. A couple of years ago, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top was in here. Happened to be my day off, so I missed that. Queen of England was in here once.
Sherry Sullivan sits next to Weaver and is making a set of riding boots. She says even without the celebrities, King's can get interesting.
We had a group of strippers come through one afternoon, and the one found a pair of chaps up front she wanted, but they were a little too long on the bottom, so she had us make a top out of the scraps. And it was right close to closing time, and not one of the guys left because they wanted to see what the outfit looked like when she came out. So.
On the other side of King's, head leather worker Jim Jackson is tapping out the inlay for a new belt. The intricate flowering pattern is called Sheridan style.
It's very tight, precise nesting circles. You get a nice flow with your stem work.
Don King created the Sheridan style, and Jackson says it's recognizable to other leather workers and enthusiasts all over the world.
It's like painting or something. If you look at different styles of painting, sometimes it's hard to describe exactly what it is, but you just can sense it and you know it.
That sound is a sudden rush of customers, Chinese nationals, on a tour of the American West. Trip leader Annie Ye says stopping at King's is always a must.
This is something really we don't see, you know. Like, I never do the horseback riding, and so every time it's just like I ask them all the stupid questions. It's just kind of amazing.
Faye Fitzsimmons is visiting with her family from rural Texas. But she says even there, it's hard to find any place quite like King's.
Growing up on a ranch, growing up with real cowboys and people who really value the land and love horses, that's the culture here. We feel totally and completely at home here, and it's very special.
For Bruce King, it doesn't matter whether it's Texans or Chinese that visit the store, or if it's celebrities or cowboys that buy his goods. What's worth paying attention to is that the products are made as they've always been, with care.
We don't toot any horn very loud. To my knowledge, ever said we're the best. We just do what we do and try to do it well. And if somebody else says we're good, that just makes us happy.
Bruce is 67 and won't be managing King's forever. He says he hopes his son Ryan will carry on. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Miles Bryan.
Now, once the horse is saddled up, you're ready to go somewhere. And while most of us probably rode a bus to school or hitched a ride with our parents, that's not how Alice Fales got to school. She rode a horse.
Oh, they had a little lean-to they made, it had a slope roof where a manger was in there, and everybody furnished hay. That was never a problem. Everybody had hay. And we'd break a bale and feed it to our horses, and they'd eat them, and then we'd have to go out and take them to water. We had the ditch that went by, and in the wintertime, why we got it from the school, and it to a trough. It was a two-room school. The community was built around the school. So everything that ever happened, any entertainment or anything, was done at the schoolhouse. The school now has been removed. My horse's name was Lightning. And I don't know why I named it Lightning, but I did. I just loved that horse. It was a white flea-bitten horse. That's what they called him, a white flea-bitten. It was very gentle. We could ride it double. My sister could ride on the back with me. If she got on, which she very seldom did because she always fell off. So I never had the patience to have her riding with me. It wasn't far, too far. It was probably 3/4 of a mile or about that. We could walk it very easily, but if I was going down to stay with my friends, I always took my horse because they lived clear down at the ditch camp. And so that was about an hour's ride from school. And I spent a lot of time with those kids. I didn't have any in school that was my age at that time. So I got to go out and work the horses and ride them. Dad had put me on if he was babysitting me. Mother went to town, he just put me on the back of old Bell, was the horse's name, big black workhorse, and I would just ride that and hang on to the harness and ride around and around and around the plow with horses pulling the plow. And that was I was being babysat. It was a lot of fun. I remember one time Dad was leveling, and I was driving the team on a big level on the field, and my sister came out and she wanted to ride around, so I stopped, and Dad got her, put her on the stand there by me, and first thing that they do, the horses, when they went, they jerk a little bit. She fell off, and I ran over with the plow, or with the leveler, but we were in plowed ground and it just bashed her down and she got right up. It was really funny. It could have killed her, but it was funny. I'm a horse person. I loved my horses. They could drive right along beside me and I'd be on my horse.
That's Alice Fales remembering the horses from her youth. Alice lives in Cody. And the piece was produced by Wayne Thomas and Caitlin Heyer. Horse and saddle are certainly part of the classic Western image. And so are wild horses. They're descendants of Spanish mustangs brought to the Americas by the Spanish in the early 1500s. Management of wild horse populations has become a problem for the Bureau of Land Management. Wild horse herds are fenced in on BLM land, but there's not enough space for the growing population. So the BLM removes thousands of horses from public land in Wyoming every year, and they ship most of the horses to long-term holding facilities in the Midwest. But that's expensive, and even those facilities are running out of space. So in 2013, the BLM partnered with ranchers to create a so-called horse eco-sanctuary right here in the Cowboy State. It's the first of its kind in the nation, and Wyoming Public Radio's Willow Belden reports.
The eco-sanctuary is located on a private ranch in southeast Wyoming. Open fields give way to wooded hills. A branch of the Little Laramie River trickles through, flanked by bushy foliage. And everywhere you look, there are horses grazing calmly, black horses and gray ones, chestnuts and paints. Rich and Jenna Wilson run the ranch. As they drive me around, the horses lift their heads curiously. When we stop, several come over and sniff our hands through the open truck windows. Jenna Wilson says they're nicer looking than she expected wild horses to be.
I guess I was expecting them to be kind of dirty looking and wild and just wild manes with stuff hanging out of them or whatever, and that just wasn't the case. They are pretty.
Rich Wilson says the 228 horses here are all geldings and all were removed from public lands within Wyoming. The BLM routinely removes wild horses to keep herd sizes manageable. They try to find homes for them, but it doesn't always work.
If those horses aren't adopted, then this is where they come and they will live out the rest of their life.
The Wilsons won't train or domesticate the horses, but they couldn't help naming a few, even though one of their contacts at the BLM said not to get too attached. After all, the horses are supposed to stay as wild as possible.
She kept saying, no, you can't get attached to these horses, you know, and make pets out of all of them. And there's just some that they'll just walk up to you, and how can you not pet them and love them?
The Wilsons say turning their ranch into an eco-sanctuary isn't actually that big a change. Traditionally, other ranchers have paid to graze cattle on the Wilson's ranch. Now the BLM is paying to graze horses there.
Whether we graze cattle or graze horses, it's just part of the business, and that's what we're doing.
And in fact, grazing horses is financially less risky than grazing cows because the BLM has promised to keep boarding the animals for life. That means the Wilsons won't need to negotiate new contracts each year. Plus, they're planning to start offering tours of the eco-sanctuary this spring, and they're hoping that will bring in some extra money. Diane Schober with the Wyoming Office of Tourism says it's a good plan.
One of the things that visitors do, is, you know, that's rates high on the list, is the authentic Western experience. And when we say Western, that doesn't mean necessarily just what you would think of in the traditional sense of, you know, cowboys. It's about wide open spaces. It's about wildlife. And, you know, it's great when you have ways that you can really deliver on that promise to visitors.
Schober says having additional attractions in southeast Wyoming, like the horse sanctuary, could prompt visitors to stay longer on their way to the national parks, which in turn could boost the tourism economy. The BLM says the eco-sanctuary will be good for other reasons, too, most notably because they need more space to keep horses. The agency's June Wendland says the BLM removes thousands of horses from the range each year, but at most a few hundred get adopted. As a result, 49,000 horses are currently in long-term holding facilities.
Nationally, we are running out of space in the Horse and Burro program altogether, in our short-term holding facilities and our long-term holding facilities.
To be clear, the new eco-sanctuary can only accommodate a few hundred horses, so it won't solve the overcrowding problem. But Wendland says it's a start, and it'll be good for the BLM's bottom line. The agency pays the Wilsons the same amount they'd pay to keep the horses in long-term holding facilities in the Midwest, but the BLM will get back some of the money that comes in from tourists who visit the eco-sanctuary. And they don't have to pay to transport the horses to the Midwest. Not everyone is thrilled with the eco-sanctuary model, though.
To call it an eco-sanctuary, I think, is really a misrepresentation.
That's Suzanne Roy with the American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign.
These are wild horses who have been taken from their natural environment The stallions have been castrated. The families have been separated. They're no longer able to engage in the type of natural behaviors that wild horses have evolved to engage in.
She says instead of removing so many horses, the BLM should administer birth control to more mares and leave them on the range. It could take years for the BLM to reach its population objectives just through birth control, though. So in the meantime, the agency is hoping to open several more eco-sanctuaries across the West. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Willow Belden.
And that story was produced in 2013. We'll wrap up by hearing about the steps the BLM is taking today to control the wild horse population. Protesters say the BLM office in Montana is trying to wipe out the state's last herd of wild horses. That herd lives in the Pryor Mountains in Montana and Wyoming. The group marched into the Billings field office this summer, demanding the agency abandon plans to round up horses and use birth control on the mares. Penny Preston has that story.
The Pryor Mountains are home to the internationally famous Cloud Stallion, a pale Palomino wild horse whose family is one of several that live in the Pryors. But there are other wild horse herds in northern Wyoming. Commercial tours take people to see the McCullough Peak herd near Cody. The mares in that herd have been darted with a contraceptive called PZP for years, and local wild horse advocates are pleased with the results. Warren Murphy is president of the board of a group called FOAL, which stands for Friends of a Legacy.
I think we're about 140 horses, and that's about the goal. We have not had a roundup there by helicopter in many years. No stress on the horses. Horses love it out there. People love seeing them out there.
But a group called Friends of Animals protested the proposed use of PZP at the Billings BLM field office. They also protested the agency's plans to round up the horses and take 25 of them out of the herd for adoption. FOA campaigns director Adita Bernkrat says they could wipe out the herd. But BLM spokesman Al Nash says the agency is trying to protect the herd. He says helicopters won't be used for what he calls the gather.
Our approach to gathering horses is to have a fenced-in area, put out water and feed. They walk in, we select a small group, and release the rest.
Nash says because of the popularity of the Cloud Group, the BLM's prior horses are always adopted.
There's only just so much landscape, and there's only so much forage. And so our job is to manage both for a healthy wild horse herd and to manage for a healthy range.
Bernkrat of Friends of Animals pointed out the wild horses were allowed only 25,000 acres to roam in the Pryors. They are also concerned that the horses are subjected to the fertility drug PZP. Dr. J. Kirkpatrick, whose nonprofit organization produces the drug in Billings, says it's being used to control horse, bison, and elephant numbers around the world. It's also used in many zoos.
We have wild horse ranges that have reduced or eliminated the need to round up and remove horses from the range.
Kirkpatrick says it's cruel to not control the prior population because the animals will starve.
We fence them. They can't roam 300 miles to meet environmental challenges like drought or bad winters. They're trapped. I watched one half of the Pryor Mountain herd die in 1977, 400 yards from where they could have survived, but they couldn't get there because of a fence.
Kirkpatrick says the McCullough Peaks herd near Cody has benefited from the BLM's PZP treatments.
Well, they're into their fourth year. They reached zero population growth in 3 years. McCullough Peaks is one of the most spectacular and successful management programs we have out here.
Kirkpatrick says several economic studies show the contraceptive approach can save the taxpayers millions. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Penny Preston.
That's it for this edition of The Modern West. Catch our next episode on the third Tuesday of the month. In the meantime, you can find lots more stories about The Modern West at our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org. Caitlin Heyer produced the podcast. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell, and I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.